People say all you do in America is take care of old people in nursing homes. Is that true? There's actually nothing wrong with taking care of old people. It's an honest job. Should I come to America? Well, it really depends. What are you looking for? Consider schools across Africa first, or wherever you might be in this world, especially if you're looking at undergrad. This is a funny one. Okay. What should I pack in my suitcase to avoid being turned around at the airport? What is the difference between M1 and F1 visa? Which nursing would fall under what? This is a Sorted Immigrant Stories podcast. My name is Zenith Mwangahamambamalao, and I am your host. And for those of you that are stopping by for the very first time, this is a podcast about immigrant journeys, the things I and others wish we knew. We have interviews and share conversations with immigrants from diverse backgrounds and countries as they share their own immigration stories. We explore struggles, triumphs, and cultural adjustments. We discuss identity, belonging, and community. And we also highlight successes and contributions to both American society and back home, and that's wherever home might be. We also review some books that touch on the immigrant story. So don't forget to rate and review, like, share, and subscribe to wherever you get your podcast from. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the second Q&A episode of Assorted Immigrant Stories podcast. In this episode, I'll be responding to some of the questions you've sent me, whether it's through email, DM, or WhatsApp. I truly appreciate the engagement, and I do encourage that you join our private Facebook group, Assorted Immigrant Stories, so we can build community, ask more questions, and continue sharing valuable information with each other. There have been so many great questions coming in. I've been putting them together for a very long time. And while I can't get to all of them, I randomly picked 7 cards today. I wrote them out on a card. I've been writing them out on some cards every time I get one I write so that I can compile them. I'll try to answer as many as I can. I only have 30 minutes, so we will see how that goes. But before I get started, I do have a few housekeeping notes before we dive in. The next episode will be our season finale. Throughout the season, I've shared several books that touch on the immigrant stories. You know, I make recommendations. If there's a specific book you'd like us to discuss or be a part of the discussion, please reach out. We've already done 2 book-centered episodes. That's episode 13 and 15, season 1. So you can go back and listen to those. And yeah, during the summer break, I'd love for us to keep reading and stay connected. All right, so let's dive in. Let's see what my first question is. These are random, no particular order. So here goes. People say all you do in America is take care of old people in nursing homes. Is that true? Okay, well, the short answer is no, that's not true. And I guess I can just go a little bit deeper, but the answer is no, that's not true. There are many other things people do, and there's actually nothing wrong with taking care of old people. It's an honest job with decent pay and sometimes very good pay if you're even working for a private family. So, but I can only speak for myself. I did work as a geriatric nursing assistant while I was still a student. It's one of the most reliable entry-level jobs. So a lot of people start there. But like I said, there are many other options now, especially in healthcare. Like, I work in a hospital now, and I see people doing other things that I never knew about before when I was working in a nursing home. You can be a transporter. You know, we send patients for many, many different tests. It can be for MRI, CAT scan, fluoroscopy, radiology. So many tests, uprights, and all this kind of stuff. And you need someone to transport those patients because we don't do it. So, and I've seen people hired just to do that. So it can be a transporter. You can be a sitter for our suicidal patients. They need one-on-one sitter. You can apply for that. You can be a scrub tech where you just gather instruments together for surgeries. And, you know, there's a process. You can be a unit secretary. Of course, healthcare is just what I know best because this is where I live. And as we can see, there are also new paths opening up, right? For example, becoming a virtual assistant. With the rise of content creation and online businesses now, that's become a real option for people working, you know, looking to work remotely or freelance. People work in gas stations to start out, warehouses or customer service too. So it really depends on what's available and where your skills can fit in. So no, I think I explained more than I should. So the answer is no, it's not the only thing, but it's still a decent job that you can do to stay. Like, it's a decent entry level job. Yeah. All right. Okay. This next. Okay. Oh, wow. Okay. Should I come to America? Well, it really depends. What are you looking for? Are you coming to visit, to study, to work, or to start over completely? Everyone's journey is so different, and what works for one person might not work for another. America can offer a lot of opportunities, but it also comes with challenges, which is why I started this podcast, especially if you're starting from scratch. At the age, you know, so what I will say is it's important to have a plan, do your research, and be clear about your goals. If you just come hoping things will fall in place, it can really be rough. And things have changed. Things have really, really changed. It's not like it used to be before you come, easily get a social security number. Like, things have changed. So that makes it even more difficult. So, yeah, depending on your reasons, I mean, you can come, but just come prepared. Just come prepared. And know that success here doesn't happen overnight. It just doesn't. It takes work, resiliency, and a lot of time, and maybe even a bit of luck. And for students, because I came as a student, so I really like to get into that. Honestly, I always suggest considering schools across your own continent, wherever you're coming from. So let's say I'm from Zambia and I'm speaking to a Zambian. Consider schools across Africa first, or wherever you might be in this world, especially if you're looking at undergrad. There are some strong programs, for example, on the continent, and much more affordable. You can always come to US for grad school when you've built a strong academic professional background. The reality is that studying in the US is very, very expensive. And without a solid scholarship or support system, you might end up in a mediocre university while carrying a heavy financial burden, and you don't want that. And you don't want that. It's better to plan smart and not just chase the American name without thinking about the cost and long-term value. So, yeah, very important. Okay, let's see what's the next question. Okay, this looks like it's a 3-in-1. Okay. I hear the diversity visa lottery results are out, but I haven't received any email. How do I know I was selected? Okay, this is a very good question. You never receive an email telling you that you've been selected for the DV lottery. It's your responsibility to check on the website where you originally filled in your application. So you'd have to go to the official website, which is www.dvprogram.state.gov, www.dvprogram.state.gov, and you'd see it's a blue button and it will say check status. Oh, I wish I could open up my laptop. Yes, it's blue and it will say check status. And when you applied, right at the end of that application, you got a confirmation number. So you will retrieve it from wherever you safely placed it and you will enter that number that you received when you applied, your birth year, and your last name. And once you submit the information, the system will tell you whether or not you were selected. Be cautious. There are a lot of scammers out there, and they're working really, really hard. And any email message claiming you won and asking for money, it's not legit. Always check through the official site, the www.dvprogram.state.gov. Next question. I won the diversity visa lottery. What do I do next? Well, first of all, congratulations. It's a big deal. Yeah, because let me tell you, winning the DV lottery shaves off a lot of years of struggle, is what I can say. So first, you will double check your original application to avoid costly mistakes. Make sure you go through everything so that everything should match. There are things that are fixable, misspelled names maybe. And you know, this part of the world, when we write dates, we put month first. In Zambia, for example, we put the date first. Those mix-ups can happen, but they can be fixed. But there are certain things, for example, if you applied and said you had 2 children and then now suddenly you have 3, that could be a problem. So make sure you go through the original application, make sure that everything is fine, everything matches. And then you will complete what's called a DS-260 form online as soon as possible. Yeah, this is your immigrant visa application. And then hopefully you've been gathering documents after your application. When you apply, you've been gathering documents, but now obviously you want to make sure everything is right and tight. You need things like your passport, birth certificate, anything, might be police clearance, depending your education, work experience, military records, depending on your background, custody records or court orders, like if you're the primary person looking after your children, if you're not together with your spouse, for example. All that is preparing for your visa interview. So when your DS-260 is processed, you'll be scheduled for an interview at the embassy or consulate in your country, wherever you say you are staying or you reside. And there's a medical exam that you have to complete by an approved physician. That information will be given to you. And stay alert and organized. Now, at that point, you can check your email and the entrance status check as well on the DV Lottery website that I share, the www.dvprogram.state.gov. And remember, being selected doesn't guarantee a visa. You still have to pass the background checks, medical exam, and meeting all the eligibility requirements. And since the number of selectees is usually more than the number of visas available, it's important to act quickly. All right, here's another question. With the new wave of executive orders, has the DV program been affected? Okay, that's a lot of people have been asking this question. Okay, as of now, the DV program is still active and running. However, there have been proposals and discussions that could affect it in the future. The major update I know for sure is the proposal to charge at least minimum $250 application fee for entering the DV lottery. Yeah. This passed in the House of Representatives, and I think still needs to be approved by the Senate. Am I saying this the other way around? But anyway, yeah, that's where we are at. And then if it passes, signed by the president, but it could also all go away. And if it passes, you know, it becomes law. So this is a wait and see, but it's there. To answer the question, is it still active and running? It's still there. They're just, I guess, proposals of what that should look like, should that cost money, and that kind of stuff. Okay.
In your last episode, your guest mentioned that he wishes he had repeated his last year of high school in America after returning from Nigeria to increase his chances of getting scholarships. Should I consider the same? Okay, that's a really thoughtful question. This is episode 9 with Kola. So I just have to give context to Kola's situation. He was actually born in the U.S., therefore becoming a U.S. citizen by birth, and spent a significant part of his education in Nigeria and only came back for college, starting out at a community college. Maybe I need to do an episode on that, community college and four-year college, to really differentiate or just to share how you can leverage going to community college to save some money. But I digress. So even though he was eligible for U.S. financial aid, he later realized that if he had done his last year of high school here in the U.S., he might have qualified for more scholarships, especially those that are tied to extracurricular activities, you know, like local community involvement. They really like to see that kind of stuff. A very high GPA, but you know, with that, you can always convert your grades. There are places where you can send your grades from whatever country you're coming from, and they can do the conversion to get your GPA. Or obviously, you can do like the SAT exams, which are offered worldwide, really, and get a very high score. And some people do get scholarship because of that. But I will tell you that all that American stuff really, really helps. Volunteering, leadership positions, sports, yeah, and really just giving back to your community, you know, wherever you are, that kind of stuff. So yeah, if that's your situation, or perhaps maybe you won the green card, or maybe your parents won the green card and it's time for you to come for college, if you have one of those situations, then the answer is yes, you should consider that, even if it's just for a semester. I know sometimes, like Kola shared, it may feel like, oh my God, my peers are going to go ahead and I'll be behind. No, just consider it a step back to really catapult you forward. It's really casting the net wide. It's a very strategic move. So yes, you should consider that. Next question. I will pretty much end up with more than 7 questions. Some cards did previously have more than one questions on them, and I thought I fixed that, but apparently not. All right. And this question is very vague, by the way, but I kept it in there. I did try to follow up to ask for a specification. I never got a response back, but I thought, okay, I can answer it as general as I can and cover what I know. So here goes the question. I hear there are many insurances in the US. What should I get when I come to America? The answer is yes. And it depends on so many things. I don't think I could even cover the kind of insurances you can get here, but I will just cover some general stuff. There's a lot to consider, a lot. So like I said, it depends on your situation. So let's say you're just coming to visit, for instance, I'll start there, right? Then you might want to consider travel insurance. And make sure that this travel insurance covers not just hospital stay, but rehabilitation as well. I've actually seen a situation in a hospital where a patient came in, they had traveler's insurance, they thought they were covered, but they needed rehabilitation. And then obviously that presents another problem. So read on the dotted lines, read the fine print, make sure it covers all that, okay, in case you need follow-up care. And sometimes you may not, you know, just depends on the injury or whatever you come in for. And if you're here, maybe just for 6 months, most people come and visit, they're here for 6 months. It might be wise to join some sort of group life insurance. For example, in our community, AZDMV, that's the Associations of Zambians in the DMV area. We have group life insurance that you can be a part of just in case something happens. You know, it's a matter of just being cautious. And if something did happen, at least you or your family have a place to start from. We have paid membership. It's $50 a year if you get a discount, and it can go up to $100 a year. And every time there's a funeral, there's a payout of $2,000. And from the group life, you get up to $20,000. So that's $22,000. That can be very helpful. Guys, funerals are very expensive, by the way. They're very expensive. We're talking $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, especially if you factor in repatriation. But honestly, even when barring here, it can be expensive, at least if you want something nice and dignified. So that's another thing I need to look into. Speaking of that, I know I've seen that there's funeral insurance. I've never looked into it, so I really can't even speak to that. Yeah, but I'll move on. So, but obviously, if you're staying longer, you're a student or whatever else you are, but you're here to stay, or you're new, you want the green card, you're here, you're new, or whatever, you're definitely going to need health insurance. Good health insurance. Don't just buy any kind of insurance. Make sure you read what the package offers, because there's so many different kinds. Even just where I work, we have tiers. There's gold, silver, bronze. So different co-pays for all that. And if something happens, you're paying different amounts of money out of pocket. So be very mindful of that. And you should also consider good old life insurance. There are different types. There's term life, there's whole life. And under whole life, you hear there's index universal life. There are all these kinds. But make sure you get something that fits your budget and your family needs. Do your research. Read and really figure out what works for you. Because some people might argue that don't get the IUL, it's a scam. Others will tell you don't get term life. It's a waste of money. You know, then there's whole life, which could be expensive. I guess depending on where you are in your life. So that's why I said, do your research, read the fine print, figure out which one works best for you and your family, and then you go from there. And then depending on where you work, try and get short-term and long-term disability. And I'm emphasizing this because at my previous job, it was part of the package, but you sort of said yes or no. And because I didn't understand it the first time, I never signed up for it because I was just like, I didn't understand it. Whereas at my current job, it's part of the package. So you're not signing anything. It's just part of the package. You get short-term disability, you get long-term disability. So check with your HR and make sure that you sign up for that because things do happen. I had brain surgery back in 2020 and I was home for a year on disability, short-term for the first 6 months and then transitioned into long-term because I was out for a year. So imagine if you don't have that. The bills don't know that you had surgery. They don't stop coming. Housing, food, childcare, everything, nothing stops. So it's very important that you have something like that in place in case something were to happen to you. And for housing, I'm not going to get into that because most places it's mandatory. Now, maybe I can get into car insurance because you see here in the US, a car is kind of like a necessity. And I remember when I first came, I had a two-door beat up. It was an old car, like two doors. The air conditioning didn't even work. But let me tell you, it served its purpose. It took me from A to B. I had it for almost 8 years before it completely died on me. I'm sharing this because it was such an old car. I just had liability insurance, which only covers the other person if there's an accident. So imagine, I didn't have health insurance. I only had liability. If something had happened to me, that would have been disastrous in terms of bills and debts and medical, in terms of medical bills and debt and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. So I would say to you, if you can afford it, just get full coverage just to protect yourself. And then something I learned again back in 2020, I totaled my car, got involved in an accident. And then I found out then that I didn't have personal injury protection insurance. It's called PIP insurance. I didn't know. So it's not mandatory in all the states. So even though I had what was considered like full coverage, comprehensive, I had to add it in. And probably they asked me about it when I was signing up for the insurance. But again, because I didn't know what it was, I probably said no. Because, you know, the more things you add, the more you pay, right? And I probably said no. Well, up until I had an accident, I realized the importance of having it. So some states, it's mandatory because I think they have a no-fault insurance laws. I believe it's Florida, Michigan, New York, New Jersey, and I don't know if I'm missing any. I know in those states, it's mandatory, whereas the other places, it's optional. So make sure you add that because you just never know. So as a new immigrant, you plan to buy or drive a car here in the U.S., you need auto insurance for sure. Yep. And like I say, depending on your state, PIP may be part of the mandatory coverage. Always check with the state's requirement. Read those pages. There's always information on the state's websites. A lot of what we don't know is usually there, and nobody will tell you to go look for it there. All right. Next question. And you know what? I've been having a conversation in my head. Some questions ago, I think I was sharing that if you want the green card, and maybe on your application last year, you said you had 2 children, and now suddenly you have 3. What I meant was, I'm not talking about someone who actually had a biological baby or someone who adopted a baby. No. I'm talking about someone who you applied and you have 2 children, but maybe something happened to one of your relatives or your siblings, and then now you're responsible for those children and you've taken them in. As long as you have not legally adopted them, you cannot just add them onto your application. You just have to go the way you applied, and then later you can legally adopt them. So that's what I meant. Hope that clarifies that. All right. Next question.
This is a funny one. Okay. What should I pack in my suitcase to avoid being turned around at the airport? Okay. It's a great question. And this one hits close to home, obviously, for many of us traveling from wherever we're coming from to the US. Look, if your friends or family okay your travel, remember, airport officials do not know that. What they see is what they judge, okay? If you guys recall in episode 10, we had Mutsa. I also had her on the last episode where we talked about black tax. But episode 10 was Mutsa, where she shared how she came on a visitor's visa, but packed like she was migrating. She packed her whole life, as she said it. She had everything from her birth certificate to her medical degree, right? She was in transit. So understandably, she needed her documents. Like, where was she going to leave them? But because she looked like she was relocating, the officer gave her 28 days instead of 6 months. And that small decision had huge consequences because she ended up falling out of status. But, you know, she's a citizen today. We thank God. You know, and she advises, maybe if you're traveling like that, FedEx your documents ahead if it's possible. Don't carry your entire life in the suitcase. I also did share a story of a Zambian lady who came to visit. I think that was a couple of years ago. And she had like 4 suitcases, most of which were not hers. I think she said the only clothes were like the carry-on luggage. But you see, in our communities, for example, in our African communities, we're sort of communal people. And so when you're traveling, people tend to send things for their family members. So if let's say I go home and I'm traveling and I'm coming to Baltimore, right? You go, oh, you know, my niece lives in Maryland. Can you take, you know, this suitcase? And it could be food, clothes, or what have you. So we tend to do that. But remember, like I said, those agents, when you come in, they don't know that. You know, people send food, clothes, you know, but in the US, the border control, they don't operate like that. They just don't know that. They may see it as suspicious. You're planning to stay, smuggling goods, all this stuff. So I would say pack light. Pack light. Yeah. Stick to 1 or 2 check bags. You know, if people send you, maybe keep it to a max of 2 instead of 4. Yeah. Carry your essentials. Ship, like I said, your documents if you don't want them in the hands of anybody. FedEx them to a trusted friend, family member, whomever you're sending them to. But also just be ready to really explain yourself, because the lady, she explained herself, and eventually the officer understood and they let her in, right? So you have to explain yourself. Don't get nervous if you're stopped and asked. Yeah. So don't let a suitcase cost your stay. All right, maybe let's tackle one more because I've got to get going.
Okay. I've heard that a lot of people switch careers to nursing. I'm thinking of coming to America to study economics. Do you think it's realistic to work and stay in the U.S. long-term after graduation? Okay. So I will mention, and maybe I've already mentioned this, after graduation, you do get what we call OPT, Optional Practical Training. It's a work permit that you get for a year after graduation. But I imagine that in this question, this person means like long, long-term, probably is asking about well beyond the OPT period, right? Long-term. Well, first of all, nothing is impossible. Nothing is impossible. But staying in the U.S. long-term after studying economics, that can be an uphill battle. Yeah, that can be a real, real challenge, especially beyond OPT. You know, an OPT, that's a different story. But beyond that, that's a whole other quarter. Yeah. So, I mean, unless you graduate top of the class from Harvard, you know, and I don't literally mean that, but you get the gist. Okay. You're graduating from some top tier school somewhere. I don't know. Yeah. And it's not to say that you can't come from a smaller school, do well and thrive. I'm sure there are stories if we look hard. It's just harder. Yeah. If your goal is to work and stay in the U.S., then you really, really need to consider careers that are high in demand here. It's kind of like you're filling in the gaps. Where are the needs? And like you mentioned in your question, you mentioned about nursing because there's a very high demand of nurses in this country and it's a decent paying job. And so you weigh your options. For many people, that's the better option. Obviously, which gets to another question of whether our dreams die or not. But you know what? That's a conversation for another day. I'm not even going to try and get into that. Yeah, definitely nursing, healthcare, certain areas of tech, you know, you're more likely to get like a sponsor. Nursing for sure. You can even get the EB3 visa from where you are. You could be in Zambia, do the NCLEX, get the EB3, track to green card, and even come that way. Yeah, so you can imagine if you graduate from a U.S. school here in one of those fields. So that's just something to think about as you plan your path. And I think Mwaka mentioned it when we had the episode with financial literacy. He was saying he wished somebody had told him, hey, if you study this, this is what it means. If you study that, this is what it means. And it's true. People sometimes come here, you pick a course, then years later, you decide you actually want to stay here, then the degree is not useful, and you've just wasted your money. I mean, you can always pivot. But yeah, that's a tough one. That's a tough one. If you want to come and study economics and work here as an economist, but look, like I said, nothing is impossible. Okay. This is another 3-in-1. Next question. What community college did you go to and why? Okay. So I transferred to Baltimore City Community College. When I first came, I went to Ferry State University in Big Rapids, Michigan. Then after a semester, I transferred to Baltimore City Community College here in Baltimore. And it was the most affordable. Still is. It was the most affordable option for me. Yeah. At that time and my situation. And I chose it because I knew that I could graduate from there and still be eligible to sit for the RN licensure exam, right? So that's what I mentioned earlier about me having an episode to really explain community college, four-year college. So I got my RN from a community college first. So I got what you'd call like an ADN. It's an associate's degree, but I was still eligible for the licensure, the NCLEX exam to get the license, which is the same exam somebody who did a bachelor's degree in nursing would be sitting for. So I weighed my options, did the math, and it made sense for me to just do the ADN because I couldn't afford to pay the university fees. They were too high. All right. right, next question. These three came from one person. What other allied health programs does the community college you went to offer that lead to decent paying jobs after graduation? Okay, so I did say already it's Baltimore City Community College. Actually, there were quite a number. It was very interesting for me when I first opened the brochure here. One that really comes to my head is surgical technology. You know, you can assist in operating rooms, radiology. You can be an X-ray tech. These are always in high demand at the hospital. We use them all the time. Outpatient centers, radiographers, you know, and they have their own independent places. And obviously, I just went to one this morning. I was getting an MRI done. I get these MRIs done for my brain every year. And it's like advanced radiology. So you have centers like that where you could work as a, you know, if you do radiography. Then another one I remember because a lot of Zambians were doing it at a certain point in time when I was going to the community college, respiratory therapy. Am I saying that right? Yeah, I think it's respiratory therapy. I'm feeling like I'm repeating the Tory, but okay, you know, that they're very important, especially in critical care. Yeah, this job comes with strong job security and good pay as well. Yep, and always on demand. They're always used in the hospital, especially in the hospital setting. Yeah. There's medical laboratory technician. That was one of them. Dental hygiene. Yes, dental hygiene was another common one. And there might even be more. And you know what? Maybe one of these days I should just have somebody from Baltimore City Community College. What I should have done is if I had looked at this earlier, I could have printed out the brochure and just gone through the other ones. But these are what I can remember off of the top of my head, because a number of international students were doing them at the time. Those who maybe tried nursing and they realized it wasn't for them, these were the common ones that people were doing and still do, actually. Yeah, because the pay is decent. So let me pull out that card, the numbers. So for the surgical technologist, you're looking at an average salary of $56,000 to $65,000 yearly. Usually that's in the hospitals. And I mean, you can even go up to $70,000. You know, for radiography, the technologist, an average salary of $65,000 to $75,000 a year. That's good. And apparently, if you're specialized, like MRI and CT, can even be like up to $80,000 a year. For the respiratory therapists, somewhere $68,000 to $78,000 a year. This could be plus minus, but I'm thinking more on the side of plus. Yeah, these and the top earners are those that are working like critical care. Like I say, they're always on the ICU units, like all the time. Lab technicians, you're looking at $55,000 to $60,000 a year. Yeah, and the dental hygienist, $78,000, $85,000 a year. So this is some good money. You can have, you know, a normal life, yeah, with these numbers. A comfortable life, yeah, with these numbers. And these programs don't take long. You get them from the community college and you come out making this kind of money. So, you know, you're new here, you're trying to figure it out, you have your green card, you don't have to worry about all this international student, but you don't want student loans. It's a good place to start. It really is a good place to start. All right, final card. Final question. What is the difference between M1 and F1 visa? Which nursing would fall under what? Okay, that's like two in one. All right, well, we've come to the end, so it's all good. So the F1 visa is an academic student visa. And the purpose is for students enrolled in an academic or language program. Okay. And it allows for full-time study at a college or university, including the associate's degree I was just talking about. You get an F1 visa when you go to a community college for certain programs. Certain programs would be M1, but those where you get an associate's degree, it would be F1. Okay. You're eligible for the optional practical training that I talked about. That's 1 year experience. You can work 20 hours on campus during the semester, 40 hours during the holidays, And after 1 year, you can even apply for hardship where you could be allowed to work off campus. It's become increasingly difficult to get that. But I know when I was going to school, you could get that pretty easily. But things have just changed, guys. Things have just changed. Yeah. And the nursing programs that fall under F1, the associate's degree, RN, I just mentioned that, the ADN, you have the Bachelor of Science in Nursing, which is the BSN. And then you have the bridge programs, like let's say, for instance, someone already did LPN, but you can do LPN to RN. Now that can fall under F1 because what you're going to get now, you're moving from certificate to an associate's degree. Then there's also the RN to BSN, where you got an associate's degree, then you got a BSN. So I did that. I got an associate's degree first, and then I just went to university for a year to get a bachelor's. And then you have the graduate programs, you have the MSN, there's the education track, the provider track, and then there's the DN, where you get the doctor in nursing program, but all these fall under F1. Yeah. Okay. And then the M1 visa is vocational student visa. I also have an episode on that. I think these are episodes, is it 5 and 6? Gosh, I don't remember anymore. Maybe 5 and 6, yeah. Non-academic, the very opposite of F1, vocational training programs, you know, trades, kind of like trade schools or technical programs, you know, I think that's what we'd call them back home, like trade schools, you know, skilled programs and that kind of stuff. They're shorter in duration. You don't apply for OPT. This could be 1 year, 18 months. You cannot work during the program. It's not like the associate's degree where you could work during the program. This one, you cannot. You have to prove eligibility to pay for the entire program upfront. I think it's similar to the F1. I mean, I think for the F1, it's like a year. I thought it was a year for the M1 too. So the nursing program that falls under M1 is the LPN, Licensed Practical Nursing. Here in Maryland, we call it LPN. In California, for example, they call it LVN, Licensed Vocational Nursing Programs. It's the same thing. It really, really is the same thing. Okay. So those are the differences. One is academic. The other is non-academic. The other one, you call F1, you qualify for OPT. The other one, you don't. F1 is more flexible, I feel like. You know, you can, because from there, it leads to a higher degree, right? So bachelor's, master's, and stuff like that. Especially if you're trying to keep status, it's very easy. But I think from M1, you can't transition. It's harder to extend and harder to transition. Let me put it that way. If you come on M1, then you're trying to transition to F1. Yeah, it can be very, 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 very difficult. And on F1, for example, with an associate, like I said, you can have a hospital file for you. But on the M1, it's a long shot. Yeah, it's really, really, really a long shot. But now with the shortages, I don't know. It might be worth looking into. Because I know LPNs now are like on demand, like nurses in general, including LPNs. There was a time it was kind of like if you're an LPN, they were phasing them out in the hospitals. Yeah, but things have changed, especially post-COVID. But for green card transition, so much easier on F1 for sure. Okay? And on the M1, so much harder. Yeah, because I think it's not a dual intent or something like that. Yeah. So which should you choose? That's up to you, my friends. That's up to you, okay? If your goal is to become an RN or a nurse practitioner, then F1 is the best choice, okay? Now, if you already won the green card, okay? I know, I've said this so many times, okay? You won the green card, you're here, you have a family, you just want something, well, you don't, because at that point, you don't even have to worry about visas. What am I talking about? But what I want to say is LPN is a great option. Okay, you start out there. You can do this program in 1 year. You can get out and you can graduate making upwards of $27 an hour. And this is like on the lower end, okay? $27. They make so much more. I mean, it's so close like to the RN, the amount of money they make. It's just that if you're trying to switch, just coming here as an international student, that one is just harder. But starting out as an LPN, if you're already a resident, it's not a bad place to start. You make a lot of money. All right. I have come to the end of this Q&A. Thank you for sticking with me. If you stayed, thank you for listening. Don't forget to rate and review, like, share, and subscribe to wherever you get your podcast from. All right. And until the finale, it is goodbye, and you do take care.